A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on February 11, 2001, in the series Spirituality in the Modern World, entitled Where in the World is God? The texts for the sermon are Isaiah 6, verses 1 through 8, and John 14, verses 8 through 20. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Good statement of the purpose of my message this morning, Jesus in our time, you can say it that way, or spirituality in the modern world, or living a life of vital faith, relationship with God, with integrity, in the light of all that we know about our world and in full face of our human experience today. A faith that has come to us down through the centuries and through the ages and has been cast in images by ancient people and ancient cultures, giving to us faith understandings which, if taken literally, collide with our present experience and our knowledge of the world. But the object of our contemplation together of God is to find a sense of the sacred and the holy, which illumines our life, our present experience, that makes for a genuine spiritual life in the midst of this world which is so wild and so rapidly changing with all of the marvels and the wonders. As Peter said, we were on retreat yesterday and listened to a futurist whose business it is to think about what is coming. He described for us a world, the world of 2010, a world not so far off, and yet a world that, frankly, I can't even begin to comprehend as he speaks about the technological advances that are just over the horizon, with artificial intelligence and, oh, I can't even go into it. I don't know enough to make an intelligent statement about it, but I just say that it's a kind of a world that is inconceivable, and yet it will be here before we know it. How do you experience God in a world that is developing with emergence that boggle the mind? Too much to take in. Oh, there are those old images and the old cliches and the platitudes, and I suppose most of us will go to our grave with them. They will be pointers to us, indicators of the reality and the presence of God. And those of us who are in the church are those who have stayed, but there are multitudes on the outside who have left because their experience and their knowledge of the world made it impossible for them to find a genuine spirituality within the context of ancient symbols and metaphors, stories. And so it's always a challenge to the church to think again its faith and where it can to revision and to reimagine in order that folk in every emerging age can live with a genuineness of faith and integrity of human experience. Or, as the song says, to find Jesus in our time. What shape does he take? How does one say God today? How can we experience that presence of the holy and the sacred in the knockabout world of our everyday experience? We live at the far end of the modern period. We live in a time that's been called the postmodern period, and that's very helpful because it means the period after the modern period. The fact you call it postmodern means that you don't know how to call it. You don't know how to label it. You don't know how to name it. Because it's a world that's emerging. Modernity had a very definite character. We speak of the Enlightenment. During that period, the amazing, amazing breakthroughs of the natural sciences and the success of the natural sciences, which have been registered in the technological marvels of our day, that a person like me can't even begin to take in when told about them. That dominant scientific outlook has, for many, crowded out the possibility of God. We've lived in an age in which many, particularly in the intellectual establishment of our time, have said that there is nothing but material. The material universe, which can be measured and tested, put into a formula. What you can touch is real. And there is reality denied to that which is invisible or spiritual. And so we have one like a Houston Smith, who with his wonderful credentials takes on the scientific establishment. And he makes room for God. He calls to account those who have ruled out the possibility of spirit. And he calls us again to the celebration of that spiritual reality. There's room for God in the world, as we noted last week. He reaches back to a philosopher born in Britain, but spent much of his time in this country in the early part of the century, first half of this, of last century, Alfred North Whitehead, who said there are two great forces in the world, the force of religion and the force of science. And these two enterprises each have their respective dogmas, and those are simply the crystallization of the best insights that they have formulated in rational propositions. And Whitehead pointed out that you can be a dogmatist whether you're a scientist or a religious person. You can deal in obscurantism, denying any light or knowledge from the other side, from either perspective. And the Houston Smith is calling the scientific establishment in our day to a fresh awareness of the spiritual dimension of life, because, as Whitehead pointed out long ago, that religious experience is also a very real part of being human. We speak of the Sundays after Epiphany. Epiphany means manifestation. Suddenly one sees something. And Isaiah had an epiphany, or we might call it a theophany, a manifestation of God. It was in the year that King Uzziah died. Maybe that's a statement like, it was that November day when John F. Kennedy was shot. Or the 7th of December when Pearl Harbor was bombed. I don't know. The year that King Uzziah died, was there some political crisis? Was Isaiah a member of the court, and was everything suddenly thrown into chaos in that time of the death of the king? It was at such a time as that, anyway, that he went into the temple and he says, I saw the Lord high and lifted up. And the temple was filled with smoke and the pillars shook. And I felt myself unworthy and experienced the ministration of angels and heard the voice of God calling me into prophetic ministry. Don't literalize that vision. Being one who was nurtured on that story from childhood, I could see the temple, I could see the smoke and smell the incense. But that, of course, is to miss the point of it. The point is that there was some kind of a breakthrough in the experience of the prophet in that moment. Suddenly, he was overwhelmed with the presence of God. Alfred North Whitehead would say, that's experience, that's human experience, that has to be taken just as seriously as the substance of some soil that may be analyzed. And of course, Philip, don't you love the question? Just show us the Father and we'll be satisfied. Well, have you ever said that? Have you ever said that, whether you said it or not? Have you thought that? Just God, just show me, you know? Would you mind? Would it be so difficult to write in the sky, I am? I exist? Yes, 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 yes. Couldn't you give us some token, some hard evidence? Just show us the Father and we'll be satisfied, Philip says to Jesus. And Jesus said, how long have you been with me? You still don't get it? If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Well, I suppose that's because Jesus was special, right? I suppose that's because Jesus was the Son of God, right? Wrong. What did Jesus mean? I'm not sure Jesus even said that. I'm sure that the author of the gospel was saying that in the human face, there's God. And in Jesus, the encounter with Jesus, 60 years after, I still remember it, the encounter with Jesus, there was God. Because Jesus was special? Well, I think he was special. Special in degree, not other than you are. Special because the luminosity of God shined brighter there, but not because he was other than human. Because I think what the gospel writer was trying to say is that we saw God in that human visage. And what the fourth gospel seems to be saying, in that classic statement, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, is that God is found in the human. Isaiah, in a moment of personal epiphany, is overwhelmed with the presence of God in the solitude of the temple, but Jesus or John's gospel is suggesting that God is found in the human encounter, in the community, in that moment when soul meets soul and there is a melding of two making one. And there in that relationship of love and grace, one says, my God. So human experience of God is that which has been attested to by the generations. The whole human story is replete with that witness to the reality of the experience of God, or the holy, or the sacred. If you scratch the veneer of this world as it appears, that sense that there is something more, that presence, here we are. We have emerged. We have emerged in this cosmic process, and well, we didn't make ourselves. And there is something that buoys up this magnificent, awesome reality of which we're a part. And what do you call that? That which shines through now and again. That which becomes apparent here and there. That spiritual reality that suddenly is the vertical presence in a horizontal relationship. What do you call that? God. And so, people like us of the 21st century, with all of our toys and all of our gadgets, all of our technology, and all of our knowledge of the cosmic reality, we still attest to that experience of God. And Alfred North Whitehead says, just as you create a chemical formula in a test tube and have empirically verifiable results, so you've got to take that human experience of God seriously as well. You can't put it in a test tube. You can't measure it. There's no way to verify it. God doesn't write in the sky. And so it is a faith perception. But it is that spiritual dimension that is in and with and under, that encompasses the totality of our life and our experience. But having said that, and wanting to say that clearly, I want to say from within the church that it is necessary for us to do some reimagining and some revisioning of those old faith stories and symbols and metaphors by which all of that has been communicated to us. That is, at least if we would communicate this experience of God beyond the walls of the church. Just think, for example, of the natural world as we know it. We call it cosmology. The cosmos, the totality of things. Think of what we know about it. 15 billion years old. At this point, I should call forward our resident physicist astronomer, Dr. Ventil. He could tell us about the speed of light and the expanse of the universe and the expanding universe and the amazing, a physical, natural reality of which we too are a part. It is awesome. It is mystifying. It causes one to be silent. It can well cause one to worship before the wonder of it all. And then I think about the Genesis story. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And all with a click of the finger, all these things happening. And there's Adam and Eve. And they're in a garden of perfection, paradise. And they're tested and they fail the test. And so they're alienated from God. We speak about the fall. And it is that fall into sin from which they have to be redeemed. And so we have the whole biblical story. That's not the way it was. I mean, we really know that. All natural disaster and all the trouble in the world is not the result of the initial sin, the original sin There were storms, there was chaos, there was terror long before the human person emerged. And we have emerged, creatures of self-consciousness, awareness. 15 billion years of this cosmic whirling mass of energy. And then there was a moment when a creature emerges who looks at its hand and then looks at another, becomes conscious, self-conscious, aware. That creature has come, emerged out of the chaotic soup, cosmic juice, and stardust. And we've just arrived, relatively speaking, and we're still trying to find our way. We really need a new story. We really should write a new Genesis today, because the writer was giving expression to his understanding of that human situation and God in the light of the cosmic understanding he had, which was so totally other. We would say so primitive and so naive. Oh, I know what he was trying to do. That Genesis story is profound. Speaking about the torn tension within the human being. That beckoning toward God, that draw from below, portraying the human dilemma, trying to give expression to all that is rotten to the core, and yet that grace that would transform and redeem. But that old story is not at all in terms of what we know about cosmic reality and the emergence of the human, the dawning of consciousness, and the coming of awareness of spirit. Someone needs to write a new myth, a new story, which would portray God not as over against us, with that terrible gulf between us because of our sin, but would invite us to a growing consciousness and awareness of that spirit that is within us, that embraces us. We are a part of this cosmic reality. We are the cosmos coming to consciousness. We are the cosmic reality now, with voice to praise, with consciousness to realize and to become aware. We are the cosmos reflecting on itself, with God, that spirit that is over and around us and within us. God, not out there, some supernatural being beyond the confines of the universe, as it were, clicking a finger and causing it to be, and then occasionally dipping in here and there. No, but God, that creative spirit that permeates the whole. God who is closer than our breath. I don't know what the gospel writer meant when he had Jesus say, I am in you and you in me. I am in the Father is in me. I in you, you in me. But at least there's a hint there of something that we are becoming more and more aware of, and that is that God is as close as our breath. The Spirit of God, the Hebrew word ruach, means both breath and spirit and wind. And so the enlivening within us and that wind that courses over us become the symbols, the signs of that ever-present God who is our life. Not some lawgiver and offended judge ready to damn us. What a bad idea. Would the creator of the heavens and the earth, would the creator of this fantastic cosmic reality with all of its wonder, would this God create a creature, a human creature with consciousness and giftedness to damn? Hell no. Hell no. It's just, again, you see, just thinking about what we know, what has come to us through the human endeavor, greater understanding, broadening understanding, then to think again, how can I be with God, knowing what I know? How is God with us, knowing what we know? Does that mean that all that stuff in the Bible about sin and corruption has no part? Of course not. Look into your own heart. Read the daily newspaper. We're animals. We're beasts. We're in a life and death struggle. So somehow or other, keep down the pride, to rule out the fear, the hostility, the anger, to let the Spirit more and more control us, that we come more and more into an awareness of that wonder of grace and love that is God. It's just a matter of finding a new way to say it so that we could experience it without some of that old baggage. Well, just one more thought. Not only our knowledge of the natural world, but our knowledge of our cultural context, which today isn't Western Michigan, and it isn't the United States of America. It's a global context. And in a global context where we rub shoulders with people from around the world, and we come to see and to appreciate the spiritual quest, the religious devotion, the multiplicity of practice, then obviously I can no longer speak about our God. I can no longer think in terms of having some corner on the truth which is denied to all of the rest of humankind. Would God reveal God's self to one little people, leaving the rest in darkness? Don't we know in this world that has become as small as a grapefruit, where we rub shoulders with people of various religious practice and we experience the seriousness of it, and the authentic devotion of it, and the longing quest of it? Don't we know that all the great religions of the world are hungering for that one taste, thirsting for that one God who is beyond all of our formulations, structures? For all of our religions are the human structures that we've created by means of which we can see through to that which cannot be seen, but which is as close as our breath. Where in the world is God? Where in the world is God? God is in the moment of personal epiphany when the sun sets, or as it did this morning, rises so beautifully in the east. The sun is in the forsythia, forced a bit as it is, I suspect. God is in the human encounter, when soul meets soul, and there's a transparency. God is in the intuition of the human heart, that there is more, and that it is good, and that we will be sustained, embraced, kept, and that we can rest in that. God is not some other place. God is with us. Thank God.